Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News, and I'm Carrie Miller. The thread question and your letters up later in the hour, but now in depth on why weirdness won't stop your world domination. Jennifer Romolini ought to know. She's a longtime misfit, an awkward, anxious, self-doubting, sweaty mess who has, nonetheless, scored and succeeded at some big jobs. And she knows how the biz world sees people like her. They pat us on the heads, she writes in her new book, and talk about our left brains. They say we're too emotional to be lawyers. We can't be business people because we're too odd. But they are wrong. Jennifer knows how you can put your weirdness to work. And as she joins me today, I think we'd both like to hear from you. Are you in a field or a work environment where it's a constant struggle to belong? Where that misfitty imposter thing lingers in the back of your mind? Has it gotten in the way of a promotion or great gigs? Have you figured out how to conquer it? So if you feel like you're weird in a world that's not, i.e., corporate America, how have you figured that out? What do you do about it? Are you looking for some advice? Here's the phone number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter, as always, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Jennifer Romolini is the chief content officer at Shondaland.com. Her new book is titled Weird in a World That's Not, and she's with us today from L.A. Hey, Jennifer, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, you can't be too misfitty and weird because you're hanging out with Shonda Rhimes. I mean, are you sure you feel like that much of a misfit? I don't buy it.
You know, I mean, nobody knows how weird it feels inside your head, right? And that's really yeah. The thing that matters. I certainly am an awkward person. I'm an overthinker. I'm sort of physically and emotionally clumsy. And all of those things come into play in the way that I work.
So let's define weird. Is weird you feel like that's the judgment that people outside your head are making, or you feel like that inside all the time? Or is there no difference?
No, I think there is a difference, and I think it's an important difference, because I think that what gets in our way a lot at work is that we think people know what's going on inside of our heads. I think this is actually much more of an internal thing. It's much more of a being intense, being an overthinker, being really emotional. I think all of those things play into feeling weird and like a misfit and being socially awkward, too. But what we don't realize is how much the outside world can't see that.
I wonder if this is kind of a gender thing, too, Jennifer. I'm not sure that men get knocked for being intense and overthinking the way judgments are made about women who are perceived like that. What's your thought?
Well, I think there are several parts of this. I think that men certainly have different standards for men. They can't be very emotional. But then again, women are not allowed to be aggressive or assertive in any way. Or that's just not allowed in business. You know, I've gotten a lot of, you know, you need to calm down. And, you know, that is the worst as a woman. So I think that that happens for women in terms of showing their stronger emotions. I think for men, it's showing their more vulnerable and what we would perceive maybe as weaker emotions that they run into problems with.
You just hit on a pet peeve of mine. I hate being told to calm down.
I mean,
if you're in a meeting and you feel strongly about something or you're really excited about something, what is wrong with letting your enthusiasm show?
Also, what's wrong with letting your anger show a bit?
Yeah.
If somebody, you know, if an employee or a fellow coworker does something that's out of line, I don't see anything wrong with calling them out for it.
Let me grab a call here from Aaron in Eagan. Aaron, it sounds like you relate to this.
Very much I do, yes. I work for a local county, but I've been in the corporate world for quite a few years, 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I played music for over 25 years, and I'm tattooed from head to toe. I have a huge beard. I really stand out where I'm at. I also work with a bunch of very highly educated individuals, and I have a GED. I've just worked my way to my position. And so every day I go into work and I feel really like I don't belong to the place that I'm at. I don't have a lot in common with the people that I work with, because they, you know, they go to wine tastings and I go play music at night and things along those lines. And it becomes something that I overthink about on a constant basis. And it does affect me every day, but I've tried to push it out, and I think I do a pretty good job. You just have to realize you are your own individual and no one can see what's in your own head.
I mean, so Aaron, A, you sound like one of the most interesting people at your workplace, but have you gotten any kind of, I mean, do you get the sense that you're not getting promotions because of this, or?
Yes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Without a question, I do. And I try not to overthink it, because I realize, you know, when you feel different, you start to push that onto yourself. And, it's been brought up to me before by fellow coworkers, because I'm also a passionate individual. So if I feel like something is not correct, I do like to lend my emotion to that, because whether you're in work or you're in life, you can't shut that emotion off. You know, you still have to be professional, but I have that emotion, and I think that sometimes just looking the way that this is how it feels, of course, this is the internal part, looking how I look and feeling how I feel, I think that it stops that. Whether that's internal or not, I'm not sure.
Jennifer, what do you think?
I mean, I would say that it probably has very little to do with how you look, and I think you know that. I think you know it's how you feel, but I would also say that jobs are, and I've been in your position. I'm not tattooed head to toe, but I've definitely been the person who just didn't fit in. I, you know, was reprimanded for being too emotional at work. I've totally been there. And what I would say is that a lot about working is about chemistry. And it has nothing to do with how you look, your beard, what you do after work. It has to do with just the general chemistry and people getting you just the way it is in any relationship in your life. And I'm not suggesting you quit your job, but I think it's hard to find real satisfaction in a job where you're not compatible professionally with your coworkers, which is really what this seems like to me. And all of the other stuff is sort of icing that you can project onto, you know? But it feels to me like, oh, maybe you're just not compatible with these people. Maybe they don't value what's great about you.
Aaron, how long have you worked there?
I've been at this position for almost a year.
Okay. Yeah, it's still early days yet. I mean, what do you think about what Jennifer said? I mean, the compatibility thing, you're still working that out.
I believe that she's correct. I don't think that it necessarily should have to do with my look, or probably if I look outside of myself, it doesn't have to do. It does have to do more with that. The individuals that I work with and myself just come from a different viewpoint in life. And we just, like she said, it's the compatibility. And I think that is correct.
Jennifer, so you have a lot of tips in the book for how you tamp down kind of the voices in your head that are saying, I feel weird, everybody's looking at me, they're making judgments, when they're not. Maybe right. A little advice for Aaron on that.
Well, first off, Aaron, I just want to say you're so self-aware and wonderful. And that's sort of the first step, I think, is like sort of radical introspection and really understanding yourself and the place you are in the place you're working. Mostly I talk about competence and working really hard and proving yourself to yourself above all else. So if there are projects that you can engage in, if there's something that excites you about the job that you can really throw yourself into and prove that you can do the work, that's not only going to calm a lot of this inside of you, but it's also going to showcase what you're able to do and sort of change the dynamic between you and your coworkers. And I think that I overemphasize hard work, being great at what you do, just sort of throwing yourself into it, going above and beyond, because I think that helps balance a lot of these awkward, weird feelings.
Jennifer, I tweeted out a question right ahead of our show here that asks, feel like a misfit in the corporate world? And JA tweeted back, every period, single period day. And then I opened up her Twitter link here, and her bio says, embrace the weirdness. So there's so many more people out here that feel this than I ever really imagined. I'm sure you knew this all along, right?
I don't know if I knew it all along, but I have felt such a visceral reaction to being in the corporate world, to how inorganic it felt, to sort of these really stultifying norms and etiquette that didn't really make sense to me. So I imagined that there were more people like me, but I don't know that I necessarily knew.
Yeah. So when we talk about the corporate world and your background, we're talking, you know, a lot of creative endeavors where it isn't super buttoned up culture. I mean, you worked in magazines, you've worked for digital companies, you're now with Shondaland. This is not what I think of as, I'm going to work in an office at General Mills every day, you know, or something like that. You've had a little bit of leeway, haven't you?
I mean, just some degree, yes, I have. But there are still sort of cultural norms that happen in, you know, magazines are part of big corporations. I worked for big tech companies that were Fortune 500 companies that absolutely had, to my mind, very draconian sort of rules and regulations. I had things that felt things placed on me as a manager, expectations that I didn't think were honest or fair in terms of how I was expected to manage people. So I've certainly been through it.
Bridget tweets, you'll love this, Jennifer, one word, Botox. My face shows everything I'm thinking. A little Botox, problem solved. To the phones to Zach in Minnesota. Zach, you've been going through this too?
Hey there.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. I've been dealing with this since I can, as early as I can remember. My first job was working for a pharmacy in a small town, and I don't necessarily have a problem with dress codes, but when they impede with like how you do something, it affected me. And so I would rebel by buying all of my ties at thrift stores, intentionally small, thin, thick, you name it, just to kind of buck the system. And what bothers me, I think, and I work in a place now that's pretty accommodating to the way I do things, but I'm around a corporate environment, and just the culture of the corporate culture, the 15-year-old stuck in middle school trying to fuss about what I'm wearing so that I'm not made fun of or looked at a certain way or that I can roll with a certain crowd, it's still very much there. And that, so I still continue, whether it's handlebar mustaches, I identify with the last caller who's like, I intentionally do stuff just to keep people on edge a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, Zach, you were going
to... Great way to keep people looking at you. And I'm 35 now, but I still feel younger just because I have not let myself get sucked into that.
Well, so, Zach, that's really cool. But you just said to keep people looking at you. I mean, this is the thing, Jennifer, right? In some ways, embracing your weirdness means you know you're going to get attention for that and not flinching from the attention, right? Owning the attention, because again, you're out there seeking it in some ways because you're letting your own self-expression show.
Well, I mean, I think that we're talking about two different things. I mean, certainly that is one part of this, and that sort of letting that self-expression out, then you're going to have to allow yourself to also feel exposed, right? So I think that's part of it. But there's also the part of just feeling like, actually, I don't want anybody to know this. My weirdness is about how emotional I feel and how vulnerable and how sensitive. And, you know, I wish that I wasn't blushing in this situation, but I am. So I think that we're talking about two different things. I think there's a celebration of that and an exhibitionism that is beautiful and fun and wonderful. And yes, you're going to have to deal with some extra attention, but you're bucking the system and having fun with it. And I think that's wonderful. I think there's also a part of people who are maybe not that confident and haven't gotten there yet, who are afraid to express their weird ideas and their sort of wild way of thinking about the world, and don't want that exposure and have to figure out how to get their ideas in the world and accept feedback and, you know, allow themselves to be on display.
That really makes a lot of sense, what you said, because, you know, when you have this great idea, you also have this kind of sense like, I need to say this. People need to hear this idea, but not being horribly embarrassed when people turn around and it takes them a couple of minutes to figure out what you're talking about. Who hasn't had that experience? But to feel like that all the time, that'd be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the other thing I talk about in the book is it's courage over confidence.
Yeah.
It takes bravery. Bravery is what's going to get you through this. This idea of confidence is fleeting. It's not a permanent state. But if you can be brave consistently, then that's going to get you through.
Jennifer Romolini is with us. If you've just tuned into the show, we're talking about her new book, Weird in a World That's Not. It's the story of Jennifer's self-described walking through the world feeling like a misfit and anxious and not really in sync with the people around her, but then working in this corporate culture where you have to exist and thrive in that. And I'm asking you, if that's been your experience, are you in a field or a work environment where it really feels like a constant struggle to belong, where you have that kind of imposter syndrome thing ticking in the back of your head, you feel like a misfit? How do you deal with that? Do you need a little advice from Jennifer? She's here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. You know, Jennifer, I was just going to say, I find this so interesting that our first calls have been from men. There's a lot of women tweeting at me on this, but I find this interesting that we've heard primarily from men. How does it go usually when you've been out talking about this?
Not that way. Yeah. But I do think, you know, it's kind of perfect because I think men are probably more comfortable.
Yeah,
talking
exactly.
About being weird, right? So it's kind of actually perfect. I've had women come up to me, but it's much quieter, you know, after a reading or a panel or even emailing me. I've gotten a lot of really lovely LinkedIn messages about, you know, because there's so much feeling around this and it feels so intense for people. So I think it's a little quieter.
Mallory says on Twitter, I work in a library where you'd think being weird would be encouraged, but what you said about compatibility is exactly right. I've always felt weird, but I still don't feel accepted in my workplace, but I do think it's a lack of compatibility with them. And to Elizabeth in Hastings. Hi, Elizabeth. So glad you called. What's this like for
you? Good morning.
Hi.
So I have an engineering background and have always worked in male-dominated fields, and it's been a really interesting dynamic because I was either not feminine enough or too feminine. I'm also a pretty petite person, so I think that has impacted people's perceptions of me, thinking that I'm younger or less qualified than I actually am. And I've definitely noticed an impact on my overall professional advancement.
Yeah. So what's happened with that? You feel like people don't take you seriously?
A lot of times. And the other challenge that I have is I'm not the most brilliant person in my technical field, but I'm also a little bit awkward. So I'm caught in this in between about I'm not the smartest of the smart kids, but I'm not savvy enough on the business world to really make that transition either. So a little bit of a catch-22.
Jennifer, what do you hear there?
Well, I mean, look, you're saying you're not the most brilliant. I would say never say that again. Because,
good,
you know,
bravo.
You're going to start to believe that. And, you know, look, maybe what you're seeing in somebody else's brilliance, you're probably not seeing all of your own strengths. And oftentimes the person who we think of as I'm using air quotes right now as the smartest, they have weaknesses too. We're all sort of this balance, right? And I think we do this vacillation between I am garbage or I am God. And I think that what we need to realize is that we're all somewhere in the middle. And figuring out what your strengths are and just sort of steering into those is going to help you a lot. And maybe you already are doing that. But I don't want to hear you say that you're not the most brilliant because, you might be more brilliant than those people in ways that you haven't discovered yet.
Elizabeth, I want you to listen to this next part of the conversation because, Jennifer, I just loved what you wrote about ambition and so why so many young women show up at offices not really understanding how to be around their ambition. And this is what you wrote. As women, we are often still afraid to be hungry, to be competitive wolves in the way that men are culturally sanctioned to be. We cower and hedge and are cagey about our unbridled desire to achieve. This is something that I've dealt with for a long, long time in my career. How do we manage ambition in a corporate culture that still looks askance at women who are openly ambitious?
Well, I think because of that sort of cultural foundation that we're existing in, I think that expressing ambition, as much as, you know, we can hashtag I'm a boss all we want, but when it really comes to expressing ambition, I think that there's a lot of fear around it. There's a lot of fear that we won't be liked, that we're going to be perceived in a way we don't want to be perceived. And so I think that we sort of spiral and get anxious and get in almost like a childlike brain, right? So the distinction of getting what you want with ambition is the difference between being a kid and an adult. And an adult says, I really want this. How can I get it? And a kid says, gimme. And I think that that's where we need to get to. This is an adult feeling. I deserve this. There's no reason that I can't own this desire. Mm-hmm. And I am going to very, very precisely and very maturely work my way through how to get what I want.
I think you've hit on a key word there, and that's some maturity. And that takes just time and experience in the workplace. That doesn't mean you can't come in day one feeling really ambitious. It's managing how you show that. Yeah.
And how you express what you want.
Right.
Because nobody should have to do this work for you, right? You should be doing all the legwork of defining what your ambitions are, understanding what your skills are and what you still have to learn. A boss should not have to do that for you. I mean, it's nice if they do, but they don't always do it. So that, again, going back to that radical introspection, is really useful for you in all facets of your career, but especially as you navigate being ambitious and finding success.
I also think it's because you know this, that there is a perception that, not true, but there is a perception that millennials feel entitled. So it's having some self-awareness and maybe tough talk with yourself about when you do really deserve that, right? Nothing wrong with ambition, but when actual deservedness meets your ambition, understanding how that works too. Does that make sense?
100%. So that was why I wrote a whole chapter about entitlement, because I really felt like, you know, this is a stereotype that is not true. But I felt like there were some things that needed to be parsed out. And one of them was the idea that I see a lot of younger people asking for raises, asking for promotions before perhaps they're ready. And what I wanted to explain was it's no judgment call on you. It's just the structure of an office. It's the structure of work. And I really break down in the book how and when to ask for a raise, how and when to ask for a promotion, with lists of like criteria, like has your job changed? Have you taken on more work? Just so you can really make this very specific and analytical instead of emotional.
I think you're being a little nice when you say it's no judgment call on you. I think there has to be a little bit of self-judgment to say, sure, my plan was within a year I'd be running the company, but let's be real. You know, have I done what it really takes to deserve whatever this next promotion is? That's also the part of maturing at work.
Right. I mean, but look, the message of this book is to be gentle with yourself. I think that what goes hand in hand and what we perceive a lot of times of arrogance, what we perceive as arrogance, is actually sort of deep wells of insecurity.
True.
And so I think that be gentle with yourself, be honest, but be kind.
Christina says on Twitter, as an RN, it was hard to be a little quirky, but I owned it, and I found that it made me relatable to my patients. And to the phones to Mahmoud in Minneapolis. Hey, hi, thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So my weirdness is is basically that I don't fit in at times. It's not because I'm trying to be weird. It's that I don't fit in most of the times. And because I come from a different culture, and I am in the engineering background. So when you don't fit in, some of the problems you face is you may not be taken serious, regardless of your brilliance or what you're presenting. In the corporate world, a lot of the times friendships form. There is sometimes politics, and it makes it difficult. It makes it difficult for someone who's not familiar with the culture, and I was not born here. I'm from Somalia originally, but I lived here since I was a teenager.
Mahmoud, do you feel like your perception of being a misfit is imposed on you because you're in a different culture, you're in a different country, you're gaining dexterity with the language, or are you also weird and all of that, which is also good, fine too?
That is a very good question. I think it's imposed because I live in a different culture and than the one I am very familiar with, and it's not something that, otherwise I'm very confident, and that serves me. Not confidence. I like what the author said about, you know, it's a fleeting concept.
Right.
Not something that you can attain all the time, but to be courageous and just face it and just throw yourself in there. That's what I do most of the times. Just basically, whether I'm being looked at weird or just throw myself in there and say what I have to say.
All right. Well, Mahmoud, Jennifer, I think we have a lot of people on the phone lines. I want Jennifer to give you some advice if she can. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if do you have any friends at your job?
Yeah, I do. I do have friends.
So you do have some friends, right? Like most of us only get a couple of people. So part of this could be, as much as our first caller was talking about his tattoos and his beard and feeling like everyone was looking at him differently, part of this could be something that you're experiencing in your mind and projecting onto the world like we all do. Part of this could be real. And if you feel like it's really happening, and if you're facing any kind of discrimination or anything that feels like inappropriate, I would address that head on. I'm a big fan of if you see something, say something. I wish I had done it more in my career. And I feel like if there's something happening at work where you feel like your ideas, your opinions aren't being taken as seriously as everybody else's, I feel like this is a conversation to have with your boss, really honestly, and talk it out. Now, in terms of the feeling alone or not connected or the politics, that happens to all of us. And especially people who are sensitive or offbeat, it happens to us all the time. So those are things like you just sort of have to gather your people and ride out that storm. Politics and offices, it's a shifting dynamic and it does change. You just have to wait it out.
You need a posse of weird people.
That's right.
Right. You can do anything with your posse. Heather says on Twitter, I am many facets of weird, and my middle of three daughter has absorbed my weirdness, added more awkward, and made it her own proud. Jennifer Romolini is with us. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about her book, Weird in a World That's Not. And it's essentially about being in corporate culture and feeling that anxiety, that kind of misfitty thing, that means that you don't quite fit in? I mean, maybe this is something that you've been dealing with since you were a kid, you know, all the way through high school. But now you're at this job that you like, but you don't feel like you have a lot in common. Jennifer's book is full of a lot of specific advice and some great anecdotes. And one of the things I'm going to ask her to talk about is this chapter called Surviving Yourself and her first appearance on live TV. Jennifer, it's so great. But we'll do that after the latest news. Also want to let you know your letters and the thread question coming up towards the end of the hour. But to Phil Picardi now. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Carrie. President Trump is in Paris for a meeting later this afternoon with French President Emmanuel Macron. The two will hold a joint news conference. Earlier today, Trump honored American World War II veterans during a ceremony at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. The former Bush administration Justice Department official chosen by President Trump to succeed James Comey as FBI director yesterday declined to embrace Trump's assertion the Russia investigation is a witch hunt. Christopher Wray was questioned about his views at a hearing before a Senate panel. Wray also told senators at his confirmation hearing that he would never let politics get in the way of the bureau's mission. Senate Republican leaders are trotting out their new health care bill today, and they are pushing toward a showdown vote next week amid indications they have a lot of work to do. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell plans to present the revamped measure rolling back much of President Obama's health care law. Some Republican senators have said they don't like the law. Lawmakers plan to announce a deal on the biggest expansion of college aid for military veterans in a decade. It's a sweeping effort to fill coverage gaps in the post-9/11 GI Bill. Amid a rapidly changing job market, it would remove a 15-year time limit to tap into benefits and boost money for thousands in the National Guard and Reserve. And China's most prominent political prisoner, Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo, has died. He was 61 years old. Liu had been hospitalized for advanced liver cancer, diagnosed in prison in May. Liu's supporters and foreign governments had urged China to allow him to receive treatment abroad, but Chinese authorities insisted he was receiving the best care possible. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:38.
I'm Tom Weber. I hope you'll stick around. We're going to be broadcasting live from Ely coming up at 11 o'clock this morning here on NPR News. It's part of several events we're holding across the state to mark NPR's 50th anniversary. 2 hours of programming coming up starting at 11, live from Ely. And if you're in Ely, stop by Whiteside Park.
I've been thinking about our conversation about weirdness and creativity in light of my Talking Volumes season. I've got to tell you, the best nights at the Fitzgerald Theater for Talking Volumes have been with the weirdest, most creative people. And we have a whole list of amazing authors that I think kind of fit that description. Season tickets on sale. We open on September 14th with Sherman Alexie. Does it get any better than that? Amy Tan, Dan Brown, it's a great list. You can get your season tickets right now if you're a member of NPR or a subscriber to the Star Trib.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by our members and by Pentair, the sustainable water partner of the Minnesota Vikings and the Minnesota Twins. Pentair, your water champion. For more information, visit Pentair.com.
Back to the conversation now with Jennifer Romolini. And Anna says, I still feel like the nerd invited to the cool kids table some days. I feel lucky to have found a work tribe that embraces weird. And to Jen in Edina, how does this fit with your life, Jen?
I feel like it fits with my life well because sometimes, you know, maybe you're not the wolf, but you still will have the ambition to want to move forward in your career. But sometimes there's not a culture in your work environment that supports that, or they think the wolf is too much of a go-getter.
Yeah, so have you felt like you've been held back because you showed your ambition and you've let your weirdness show a little? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like there's still that environment for women that if they find you too direct or if they think that you're trying to go for something, that there's still that inner competitiveness.
Right.
That I think women are not secure with in each other.
Right.
And so sometimes you actually find a culture of lack of support.
How do you counsel, Jennifer, people? I mean, so you've got people that are working for you at Shondaland, right?
Right.
So how do you counsel people on what Jen's brought up here?
Well, I mean, sometimes you can't change. you can't change the work environment. And sometimes it just means you have to go and take, you know, all of your abilities and skill and ambition and take it all somewhere else. But you shouldn't make that decision until you've exhausted every possibility in your current job. If it's a job that you like and a company you like working for, then you should address these things. I think the more we speak up and speak out and we don't keep these things quiet, the better. So if you're in a position where you feel like someone's threatened by how ambitious you are, address it. I think that we should be speaking up more. We should be speaking out more about these things. And you could say to somebody in a very gentle and smart way, hey, I really want to go for this. And I really love this job. I love my work. I hope that in no way this feels threatening to you. I respect you. And I just want to do the best work I can while I'm here and, you know, be rewarded for that work with titles and a salary that reflects what I'm doing.
That's good. That's really good. How long did it take you to learn that?
I mean, I think a long time. Probably my issues were so intense because I was so direct and I was, you know, I would say possibly a little too aggressive. So things really came to a head for me very early in my career, and I had to learn this, you know, the hard way.
You know, I got the sense when you were writing about working for that fashion editor who sounds a lot like the Devil Wore Prada, Anna Wintour. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
No.
Okay.
No.
It sounds like she mentored you. Not that she was all warm and embracing, but that ended up, I mean, is that how you would describe the relationship, and that it ended up being extremely valuable to you?
Absolutely. I mean, mentorship looks all different ways, because here's the bottom line is that nobody's perfect, right? And you can't put people on this pedestal. Your bosses are just human beings. They're struggling with their own struggles. And that boss at the fashion magazine, I'll tell you who it was. It was Kim France. She ran Lucky Magazine.
Okay.
And we're actually very close now. And we were very compatible and very in line when I went to work at that fashion magazine. But she had a very important job to do and couldn't coddle me all of the time. And her style of management was not to coddle. And I learned a ton from her, even though I wouldn't say she was my best and certainly not my easiest boss.
The question that came to my mind when I was reading about that is, how do you get a mentor without seeming creepy or clingy, but also getting a mentor who really understands that emotional side of you, that it's not just all business?
Well, you might not. And I think we're sort of fetishizing mentorship right now. And young women are feeling, you know, invaluable or less value when they don't have a mentor and they have it on this to-do list, this very ambitious to-do list. Where's my mentor? You know, I need to check that off. Mm-hmm. My feeling is mentorship comes in many forms and it finds you. You don't necessarily have to find it. But one of the ways to attract a mentor, if it's going to come to you, because again, this is about chemistry, is by being earnest, eager to learn, open. All of those things, for me, those are the people I mentor the most. It's not necessarily the person who's like coming up to me, you know, like in a Wonder Woman pose, like, I want a mentor. It's the people who really have an openness to learn, who I see an earnest desire in to succeed, and who are pleasant to be around, quite frankly.
To the phones, to Andrea in Duluth. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I am lucky enough to be one of the people who has found the best job. I am completely able to be my weird self. I own it. Everybody I work with is artsy and unique and weird in their own way. And I've actually found that when I have to go into standard daily life, the school functions for my children or something else, it's actually very hard for me to not pretend, but to act as a standard average adult, because I enjoy being weird too much to feel comfortable acting normal.
I should have you on the show, Andrea. I love the way you're describing that. Well, wait a minute, though. Maybe your view of what has to be standard in meeting your kids' teachers could loosen up a little bit, right?
True. I am the weird mom of all my kids' friends, so that's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the stereotypical things that you know, I don't like stereotypes, button-downed functions that I need to be, you know, quote-unquote normal for.
This is a really good question. Jennifer, what do you do outside the workplace where there are situations where you still have to be a little buttoned up?
I mean, I have a weird daughter. I am a weird woman. I can relate to everything you're saying. School functions, I go back right to when I was a kid and feeling like, how do I live in this situation? And my daughter feels the same way. I mean, we basically have a thing of, okay, there are certain norms you have to show up for. There are certain things about school that we just need to go through the motions of because that's just life. There are certain things we all have to do that we don't want to do, and we just do them. But other than that, I just feel like, you know, if it's an assembly and you want to be wild and crazy, like, let your freak flag fly. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Jennifer, will you talk about the first time you were on live TV? Because this is such a great chapter on surviving yourself and self-sabotage. And it reminds me of that scene that I love out of Broadcast News. What happened?
So I was at this point a fashion expert, and I say that in quotes, and I was asked to be on local morning news station to talk about, I think it was spring trends. And I had to show up because it's local news. I had to show up at like 4:30 in the morning, and I was rushing out of the house, and I was really, really nervous, and it was live. And, you know, they put hair and makeup on me, and I'm sitting in the green room waiting for my segment to go on. And we have, I think, 2 minutes. And the producer comes back and sees that I have a silk blouse on. And I not only have sweat under my armpits, but I have armpit puddles. Like, I've forgotten to put on deodorant. It becomes clear to everybody. And I am just dripping sweat. And so everyone's freaked out and horrified because I can't obviously go on like this. And they bring me out into like a public space, and they have two people start blow drying my armpits at the same time with my arms up in the air. And the hosts can see me. The entire crew can see me. And this was one of the most humiliating moments of my life, but also one of the best lessons, because I was looking around with my arms up in the air in the studio at, you know, 5:30 in the morning, and I just started laughing. Like, there was nothing else I could do. I was like, this is so absurd. And everybody started laughing. And instead of this being like a massive humiliation, it was this bonding experience because I was like acutely human in that situation. And we went on to have this really fun segment that I don't know would have been so fun if that hadn't happened. So
do you know that scene that I'm talking about from?
Of course. Okay. Flop sweat. Of course.
Right. But what's so funny about it is when Albert Brooks is describing it to Holly Hunter, and she's like, well, it wasn't unprecedented, was it? I mean, in some ways, what you're describing is somewhat unprecedented, right?
Yes. I mean, look, but that's the other thing. You survive.
Right.
You survive these situations. You can just be brave, go through them. I came out the other side. You know, I wasn't even that dinged up, honestly.
Glad to hear it. You survived to tell the tale with humor.
That's
and
right.
To entertain me, which was great. Call here from Nicholas in Minneapolis. Nicholas, hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Well, I was listening with some interest, and I found at least some of the comments to be interesting. I found them somewhat similar to the bumper sticker that is sometimes seen on the car. The car is driven by liberals, and that's a bumper sticker that says coexist.
I've seen that. What's the comparison?
Well, I think the kind of message of the driver of that vehicle is saying, hey, why don't you coexist with my liberal values, my liberal culture, my liberal view of the world, but I'm not going to respect and coexist with your conservative traditional values, especially religious values. And so one of the examples I've thought of is we hear about people considering themselves weird or other people considering themselves weird. But in reality, much of that weirdness really comes off as just plain old disrespect and rudeness to other people. One example is, many people today, there's increasing use of taking the Lord's name in vain. That's extremely offensive to Christians. It's very offensive. It'd be similar to using a particularly vulgar term to refer to a homosexual.
We get the picture. So yeah. You're saying, so in a culture, there are norms, as Jennifer has acknowledged, and there's nothing wrong with respecting those norms and fitting in. Is that fair enough, Nicholas? So
that's exactly right.
Okay.
And I think some of that weirdness is really just rudeness and disrespect.
Okay. I want to hear what Jennifer has to say about that.
I am in no way promoting rudeness or disrespect. And one of the missions of this book is to teach people who feel sensitive, and this has nothing to do with political leanings, and this has nothing to do with religion. It's talking about your emotional state. And one of the missions of this book is to teach people to work within systems, to work within norms, no matter how weird it feels inside. There's no part of me that would ever promote disrespect of any culture or religion, and even the weirdness of work, the inorganic way that work feels. One of the things I say is that this is just the way it is, and you can choose to do it or not to do it. But if you're going to go into a conservative work environment, you need to learn to work within that system. So I don't agree with you, and I also don't agree that coexist means anything more than coexisting and all being together in one space.
Jennifer, I have to say, I did not expect the whole chapter on bras. And maybe I had no idea this was a deal. Maybe we'll just leave that as a little tease for our listeners to get the book. But you persuaded me. It's a deal. So wondering how to manage bras in the workplace. There is a chapter on that, along with all the other great stuff in Jennifer's book. This has really been fun. Thanks much. Really good to have you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Jennifer Romolini's book is called Weird in a World That's Not.